to be expected. So I think we're set here. It's not fuzzier than that, right? All right. OpenBSD is a wildly popular packet filter. I'll quickly go through this. Who am I? That's me. What to expect? Why are we talking about PF again? So I think we've all touched upon PF in probably every meeting that we've had, at least around OpenBSD or any BSD. Almost we talked about IPF, IPFW, PF. We've talked about CARP. We've talked about PFSync. All these things, but we've actually never really talked about PF. So I don't know what experience level here is. I'm going to try and cover mostly some introductory stuff to PF. Hopefully get some more people interested in PF and what it really is, how it works, and hopefully spark some interest from some people who have not yet used it or switched to it, and maybe hopefully convince Apple to think about PF as well. And hopefully I'll give you some useful guidelines. Some of the things that I've taken since I've been using PF, of course everyone's got their own ways of doing things, but this is just some of the stuff I've come across, I've found useful, and hopefully people did. What I'm not going to talk about is comparing it to everything else, because that's just been done to death, and I'm not going to go into gory details because this is too long and boring, or maybe not boring. But. So the history, very short, it's born in OpenBSD 3.0. And you can read about the history basically from anywhere. But basically, it's a truly BSD licensed packet filter, and it has been now integrated into many of the BSDs and it's widely popular. Basic functionality of packet filter, hopefully, if any packet filter, but PF in general, traffic normalization can be referred to as scrub in the rules if you want to think about it that way. It does NAT, PAT, address translation, basically all types, and many different ways, and the essence is packet filtering. Some of the more advanced functionalities in PF is packet tagging, load balancing, tables, anchors, and we've all heard about SPAMD, and I think we've had a talk about off PF, if not, I can touch upon it if anybody's interested in what it is. And of course, it integrates nicely with a redundant gateway or firewall setup with CARP, PFSync, SSyncD for anybody who uses IPsec. So, packet filtering. It operates in the kernel space. And how does the packet actually get there? Well, you can see how it gets there. So there's no firewall D running, as you may see on some commercial firewalls. It actually runs the kernel space. PF is basically a layer 3 and layer 4. It looks basically at those two layers in the stack. It does not do application layer filtering, which means anything up to layer 7. And layer 2 can be achieved with tagging, which I will touch upon a little bit later. It's not your, let's say some commercial firewalls that put everything into the packet filter. But PF concentrates really around layer 3 and layer 4, IP and protocol. Talk about the PF itself. There's a pseudo device to allow the user land to interact with packet filter. You are not limited to having that interface to the kernel, to dev. You can put it in one popular place in var www. And you can sort of query, and you can do other things if you're interested in doing so, or you can have it in any other true route. But quick heads up on the node dev mount option if you decide to do that. PFCTL is the utility, useline utility that actually interacts with the device, which in turn controls packet filter. Pretty easy. So, a quick aside, any questions, I'll stop and talk about something else. If anybody wants to know something very specific about something, just stop, ask questions. There's no formal question and answer thing, so fire away, I guess. And I'll try to answer it to the best of my knowledge. And most importantly, with all technologies developed by OpenBSD, PS design implementation allows one to follow the KISS principle. Yes. Anybody know what KISS is? All right. Keep it simple, stupid. I'm going to talk about that a lot. I truly believe in that, and it helps with so many things, not just around firewall, but technology in general that I've developed with this in mind. And you do very well. So I'm going to brush over some of these options. A lot of the stuff you can actually read about in MPage and FAQ and everything else. So it's kind of redundant for me to talk about all this stuff. But it's some of the normalization that PF will do. We'll normalize incoming packets and sanitize them so as to protect not only the hosts behind it, but to basically do that anyway. In most instances, scrub and all will suffice. There are some instances where you need to play with scrub rules. Scrub in all actually adds the fragment TCP, which is not listed. It's expanded by the SCTF. Add JMS on there, so I'll add that. But that actually is part of the default to dissembling to feedback. Some examples of where you would want to change stuff is if you're running an NFS server behind a firewall, you need to tell PF not to remove the node fragment, but you may want to play with MSS, Max, MMS, and MSS if you're dealing with JRE tunnels, and these sorts of things where you can sort of fine-tune and figure out what you want to do. There are very specific examples, and if you're interested in any specific one. Address translation. Basically, address translation is the process of altering the destination and source address and or ports of a connection. Pretty self-explanatory, probably an example in a little bit. Important to note that translation occurs before filtering. And in the rule set, we will see in a minute, a pass will automatically pass. A pass in a address translation will automatically create a state and pass through packet filter. When you are filtering, and you have, I think it's best by examples here. So we have a keywords and order of operation. This is the order of operation. They go through BINAT, RDR. BINAT's in and out. Redirection rules are for inbound connections, and that is for outbound. So a few simple examples. These are very simple, so I'm falling apart here. BINAT on egress from 10102 to any to block. Yes?
What is egress, inbound or outbound?
Egress. So egress actually is, it is an interface group. In OpenBSD, you have interface groups that you can assign to interfaces. So it's actually BINAT on interface. So you could actually say BINAT on FXP0 or EM0 or GEM0. But in OpenBSD you can, and I think the other ones as well. You can actually assign a interface to a group. By default, OpenBSD puts the interface that has the default routes. It assigns that to the egress group. So in this example, we'll guarantee that BINAT on the outside interface, which is pointing to the internet in this case, we'll guarantee that it's that. From any to any, 1.1.1.2 to 1.8.1.1.2. Pretty self-explanatory, it's a one-to-one NAT. With NATs, you can go down real quickly. You can tell it not to NAT, but NAT everything else. For example, we could do a NAT egress, the third example line, source hash, and it's called a pool of addresses that you can NAT to. So sometimes in a corporation, you may have a large LAN behind it, but you don't want to port address translate to one IP address because you have a finite number of ports you can actually translate to. So it is useful to place a pool of IDs, in this case /24, to NAT outbound. The redirection rules, any questions about these? Pretty simple. All right. Redirection rules, pretty self-explanatory. The other one's the second one there on the redirection is pretty interesting because you can actually run a non-privileged web server on port 8080 and have PF actually redirect it, and you have no issues with root at that point. And then we'll see a little later on the very last example how to load bounce. That is a simple load bouncing port 80 to three servers in a round robin fashion. Did I miss anything? Alright, back to filtering. Yes.
Very last one. Round robin, people escape, patient escape in the web server?
Yes, so when you do an RDR, okay, yes, I didn't mention this. So when you do an RDR pass or an app pass, basically a pass will create a state at that point. If you leave out the pass, you're then required to use a filter further down to actually create a state and do something and pass it or basically block it. Does that answer the question? Yes, if the RDR pass is in there, it creates a state. And it goes in the state table. Which PF is a packet. So when the first thing when PF receives a packet from the stack, basically the previous place the packet is, first scans the state table. If the state exists for the incoming packet or outgoing packet, it passes it immediately, and that's it. If it's not in the state table, it then goes to rule evaluation. The state table scan is in order of magnitude faster than rule evaluation, so essentially you want to always be creating a state. As I mentioned, a state could be either inbound, outbound, or floating, or interface bound, rather. And by default, yes, there's a floating state policy. So what that means really is that when you create a state on one interface coming in one way and you're going out another way, that if that packet happens to come across the other way, it would still match the state, even though it was coming from a different direction. And we could also do an interface bound policy, and that's typically done with IPsec and queuing and some other things. You want to keep state, as I mentioned, keep state flags, SSA. Why? Why do you want to keep state? Well, not only for the state table lookup, but you ideally want to create your states during the initial scan, handshake. And for many reasons, one reason is window scaling, because the scaling is actually negotiated during the initial handshake. So you can guarantee at this point that PF is going to be aware about any scaling that's going to be going on and being tossing to the table. By default, OPC 4.1 and current right now is going to default to key state flag SSA for all rules, and you'll see that shortly. As you'll see, it expands it currently. Right now. Does that make sense? Any questions about state? It's hard to explain, for me at least. Generally, last matching wins. If you look at that example, pass in, lock in, pass in. So the match winning rule would be the last pass in part of E4A. However, there's a quick keyword where you can bypass the last matching rule and have a quick evaluation, basically abort the rest of the evaluation and leave the evaluation right there. And in this case, for that packet will be blocked based on the second one. State tracking. Now there are tons of options here with state tracking. You can do source tracking, you can limit the number of connections from a single host or from many hosts. You can there are a lot of ones described here, but it kind of goes too far into the gory details about what you can actually do. If you're interested, let me know and talk about it, but I don't want to. Alright, so these are some of the things that I kind of go use as rule of thumb guidelines for some of the things that I do. They may apply to you, they may not. take it with a grain of salt. Use Skip for interfaces you never want to filter on. I've seen places that in the past you could do pass quick on loopback, pass quick on, you know, 300 interfaces, but it's actually faster for the engine to just say skip on it and see if it won't even bother evaluating that rule. So it says skip on loopback, the encryption, any tunnel of the interfaces. Sounds good. Help. Default deny the pass. The way we typically write a firewall rules, right? So this is, that's a basic. That's all you need. You don't need anything else. Something, again, this is part of my experience of what I've really run into is firewall admins in general, not just PF, but anything. In versus out, a packet comes into an interface and it leaves another interface. So in an interface and out of an interface. So you can think of if the south side of your firewall is the private side, a packet coming in is still on the inside, and a packet coming in can also be from the outside interface. So that's why I tried to say think interface, and that sort of clears up how to write a rule set. You want to pass in proto HTTP 422. In this case, you could say pass it in on the outside interface versus pass it in on the inside interface. Something that I've run into people get confused with, so I thought. So consider passing or blocking the bounds. When you're doing that, you're saving your rule evaluation, unless you have your rule set in a completely different way, such as policy-based routing, which we'll talk about. You pass on the inbound, so you just see it once, and you just have to evaluate it again. You just have to evaluate the packet on the way out of another interface, or the same interface. Again, some of my experience, use macros, but remember that PF scans them. So the cost in PF is exactly the same as writing the rules out. So please don't go crazy. Help other people actually read and understand the rule set. I have seen rule sets that have a page and a half of macros and three lines of a rule set, and it is impossible to decipher unless you actually, you can't read the rule set. You have to figure it out yourself. And that's a basic example. It expands it, and it's very handy. But don't go overboard. Feel free to do what you want, but it's just help for anybody else who may have to look at it later on. Tables. Tables can be very powerful and useful. Many things we've seen SPAMD use tables. We've seen off PF use tables. Tables can be used to many things. They can use deload, used as an overload to a rule set or to a rule to indefinitely block people if they, for example, come to a site. A lot of options there. You can load them from tables, you can load them from files, you can dump the files, and do what you want. They can be consistent or general time, yes.
I'd say use the relationship.
So basically, you can use a list, macros. So if you have, for example, five rules, or five IPs, you want to allow port 82, say. Pass in proto-TCP port 80 or 2.1.2 to 3.4.5. If you get to 6, it's actually at that point becomes faster. Don't ask about the specific details about how, why it's faster, but it is it's more advantageous to use a table if you get to 6 IPs, because then instead of evaluating 6 individual rules, you're going to evaluate one rule with a table lookup. And the table lookups use radix tables, and they're relatively quick when you get to at least 6, and they're worth the overhead at that point. Does that make sense? Alright. Packet filtering, order the rules to help the optimizer. You can actually optimize the rules, and PF uses something called skip step. In this example, we have 5 rules. PF will evaluate the first rule and say, okay, this packet matches block all, so we're going to say block all, but we're going to go to the next one because last full win. We pass in on egress port HTTP to 1.1.2 for 80. Okay, no, it's not matching this. Pass in on, oh, wait a minute, if you say my IP address, and I know that I'm not going to that IP address, so I can skip world 2 and 3, or rather 3 and 4, and then I can begin reevaluating again at the last one. Does that make sense? Hard for me to describe that. So it can actually parse the rule set, parse the rules, and based on so it'll key it off of everything. It'll key it off the interface, the protocol, the address family, INET or INET 6, the protocol, from address, then the to address, and then lastly the port. So we'll go through all of them. And this wasn't a good example because it didn't show that. But we'll go through all of them. Yes. Yep. Skip. So PF does optimize by default to an extent, yes. But however, you can help the optimizer to, in the way you write your rules, you can do some of it for it, and then the optimizer tries to be very conservative. You can tell it to be overly aggressive, but I don't know. I've never tried the aggressive one, and I have no idea what it really does. But it's pretty conservative, and it will try to do it, but to guarantee as much as you want, if you can, write your rules in a way that would help the optimizer to do as little work as possible. For a rule set that's, maybe 50 or 60 lines long, it doesn't matter, but when you're dealing with rule sets that are hundreds of lines long, then there's a benefit to reevaluating rules, the way you write them. Where am I? Oh, okay, just some more rule thumbs. Redundant firewalls. This is one thing I was mentioning earlier about interface groups. Try to keep the rule sets as machine independent as possible. Use either an alias or a macro or interface groups, which I think most of these seem to have by now, to help making rule syncing and tf.conf syncing very easy. Seamless between multiple boxes. This thing has, and the last one has come up quite a bit in various places. But with CARP, it's a mug, it's not really a rule of thumb, but you always have to filter on the physical interface, not on the CARP interface. So you wouldn't say pass in on CARP proto TCP 480. You say pass in on egress or EM0 or whatever for the tagging. Any questions? It's too slow, too fast, too boring. Too simple. Policy-based filtering. Oh, tagging. So I mentioned tagging earlier. You can one of the things you can do with tagging is policy-based filtering. It's a different way of writing a rule set. I've seen it used in larger installations and smaller installations, but it's kind of cumbersome in smaller situations. But basically, you would assign a packet a tag at the very beginning. You assign all your packets a tag, and at the very end of your rule set, you have your policies to say, I want everything that has got this tag to go out this interface, and I want everything that's got this tag to get dropped. I want everything. Basically, you have your options, basically. And it's a policy, and that policy never changes. You just add to the add packets to the tag, or tag to the packets that are coming around. Again, I've never seen this in small solutions. I've used it in larger solutions, but mentioned layer 2 filtering. PF doesn't do layer 2 filtering, but it can use tags to do so. You can tag a Ethernet frame in a bridge with a specific tag, and that tag will get evaluated by PF. One commonplace do this is do MAC address filtering for wireless routers. Why you would want to do that, I don't know. But some people still like to do that. It's kind of old, but still there. New in 4.1, current right now, is you can now tag flows, like you said, flows within, I can take that cough, and you can then evaluate the tag ETF, and now you, what the resulting advantage there is, you can now queue IPsec traffic to ETF and do something more with it. So is there a question? I guess it's a basic overview of like what it does and anybody who's made something useful come out. Dashnos example, just one quick example that I ran into a few weeks ago. What's a bastion host? Everybody know what a bastion host is? It's a host that you would allow public access to from the internet into your network, and that host would be a trusted host, and from that host you could bounce to other hosts inside of your network, or you could bounce multiple times, depending on how you have your infrastructure architected. But you have, you know, passes through your firewall, you get to this bastion host, what do you do next? How do you control the user? You can control the user on the shell, sure, no problem with restricted shell and all things like that, but what else can you do? This is almost a complete list. So you allow them to stitch in, and this is the use of the group and user keywords in the packet filter evaluate. Pass out untrusted proto anything all for anyone who's in group admins, so anyone sourcing as in the group admins can do anything, as well as anybody in the BH users, fashion host users group can do NS lookups, and they can SSH anywhere. But they can't do anything else. Is that useful? Maybe, yes. So it's, yeah, I can do it. Is that? Oh.
I mean, I've had the discussion a whole number of times with other people, and it's like, what's the point? I mean, outside of doing restrictions and egress, what's the point of putting a PF or any firewall on? I have my arguments for why, but what do you say for a bastion host? I mean, you got a web box or a web server, bad example, but like whole number of public servers. Give me the case for why run PF on.
Why to run PF on a bastion host? Well, okay.
You know, if you're not running a mail server, it's not going to answer on 22. Right? I mean, turn off send mail.
Well, are you talking about the pass-out rules, or are you talking about
pass-in
rules?
No, I'm talking about
bastion
hosts in general.
Why you would run a firewall on bastion hosts? When was the last time you had a user just open up THTTPD on port 8080?
No, bastion host is a public server sitting in the DMZ or publicly on the internet. I mean,
so you're saying if only SSH is open, why put a packet filter in front of it at all?
Yeah, I mean, if all you're doing is you have SSH open, you know, or serving web pages or doing mail or whatever, what's the point? Alfred?
Right. Right. Well, I mean, in this example with bastion hosts, you wouldn't allow the user to do anything except with restricted shell, have them allow SSH and host and a few random utilities. But he's talking about the instance to say if you have a web server out there on the internet and it's listening on port 80, why run PF or anything on that box to say allow port 80? That's his question. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. I'm actually confused on what we're talking about. George asked a question. He asked, why would you run PF or any packet filter in front of a box or on the box that's running SSH or Apache or whatever it is? Why run anything? Why filter at all?
Let me elaborate. I mean, I've had the argument with a number of people. I mean, I think there is a case in terms of, you know, TCP fragments and things like that. It's quite limited. But if you have a box that, you know, that's doing limited things, you know, and I mean, by default, ports are not open, right? Outside of what you're serving, right? If you can give me an answer based on that, that's what I argue. But outside of that, I mean, there isn't. No, but what do people do? If you have a box that's on the internet, it's application server, it's doing whatever. Do you run PFI, PFI, PFW, whatever?
Here's my
theory.
One of the
That's the case for ingress filtering too. I mean,
the other reason to do it is that you know, there's so many large software packages like Google software, modern software, not aware of
when you're a fan of James, you don't
know. I'm a busy guy. I'm a very busy guy. No, I mean, but you said, I might be a great guy, and I might have never do that, but you know, the guy you hired might be.
Of course.
You know, there's only someone doing something now, just to get a job done, you know, to get some right, and
I mean, you know, so. You can also use some of the other options within PF if you want to, such as source track and stuff. You can limit the number of actual connections or state entries to whatever you want.
Yeah, connections, you can get fragments and so on and so on. They're scrubbing and everything. There's things like that. There's a case for it. I don't know. I'm just curious because I've had the argument a whole number of times with people. I think there's a case. I wouldn't like say there's a brilliant case because I don't know about you guys. I've had a bunch of boxes running vacant.
Having a badge host, I mean, a separate firewall host, dedicated to the firewall in front of whatever your server is, whether it's a web server, whatever else you're doing. The worst case for doing that is your firewall host, in this case, is probably the only thing they did, a hard operating system that's like specifically made for really hard to crack.
But what if your server's running open? What if your server's running open?
What?
If your server's running open?
Well, your server might be part of it also, but you got a separate box that you also have to track in addition to the box.
Well, no, the argument.
No, he's actually talking about the advantage of a bastion host. That's not entirely what George is asking.
I'm talking about a server sitting, say, in a VMZ or on the public internet.
Right.
Serving something.
Why is it a bastion host in front of it, right?
No, he said, why put PF in front of it? Why put a packet over it?
Doesn't make any sense. Okay? If you have, you know, connectivity and you're going to sit there and you have like two servers or one server in a location, you know? Oh, and I'm going to build another box? I would love that, you know? Build another box instead of a firewall? Tough argument.
It's also look at the architecture that you're also talking about. So I mean, if you have one box or three boxes, you're going to run a packet filter on each box. If you have a large environment of, you know, 150 boxes, yeah, you're going to put a firewall cluster for it. And we'll continue that. Logging. Not often reported to debugging. Please learn how to log. I ran into this is something I ran into today, and it just drove me nuts. If you're a firewall admin, please know how to log. And logging in PF is pretty easy. It logs to a interface, and pflogd will write the file in PCAP format, and you can read those files. And do I have, yes, you can obviously log to the default, or you can create another interface, another PF log interface and log for that for a very specific troubleshooting or whatever that may be. Okay, moving on. So, so queuing, some of stuff, there's a lot of stuff here that, there's a lot of stuff that PF will do and help you do and touch upon, and I don't want to touch upon everything. However, there's one thing very important to mention is queuing. One thing to remember that we run into a lot is, remember, it's only really useful for outbound traffic. Once a packet hits your inbound interface, it's too late, you can't do anything about it, it's already there. However, you can queue stuff leaving the inside interface to go to your inside network or leaving your outside network. And that's something that's important to remember when thinking about queuing. It's not going to really do anything for a DOS attack or anything like that, because the packet's already arriving at your interface. There's nothing you can do about it. Off-PF, touched upon it, I think, before, I'm not sure in the meeting or not. Off-PF allows a user to authenticate to the system, and off-PF will insert that user's IP into a table via an anchor, and you can do what you wish with that user. You can redirect them to certain websites, you can allow them to do anything. One common application for this is wireless authentication. The user logs in to the device, and based on authorization, they get a set of rules. Any uses to it? Well, I don't know. PFSync, CARP integrated with PF, obviously. We've talked about CARP. CARP sees thousands of things of CARP that's worth mentioning. And something nice to add to CARP, obviously, is NAT and redirection rules for load balancing. You have full load balancing firewall at that point, which we heard Bob Beck talk about 2 months ago, so I'm not going to go against it unless you want to hear about it. Performance, this is something that people always ask about, the difference between ASIC firewalls, hardware-based firewalls, and software-based firewalls. SPF is a software-based firewall. But ASICs are expensive, they're difficult to update. Basically, you have the software on the chipset itself, and it has a finite number of actions that you can do, and the hardware vendors will choose what they want to do on it, and yes, they can move packets at extremely high rates. However, it's not as flexible. One thing to think about when you're talking about firewall performance is packets per second versus megabits per second or bandwidth. There's a difference. The important number to look at is packets per second. Reason is you have PF or any software firewall will do the same amount of work to filter a 64-bit or 64K packet versus a 1500 packet. It's the same amount of work. So even though it's quadruple or whatever, or some magnitude higher of bandwidth, it's packets per second that matter. Some of the things that can help you can look at while looking at performance is choice of hardware. Even though you're on a 100 megabit network, using a gigabit interface will help. There are more buffers on the NIC itself, so it has less interrupts to do. We can store more in the buffer, and when it does an interrupt, it passes it up to the MBUFs higher rate. Always comes down to hardware and choice of hardware. So, wrapping up, more information. Man pages are extremely useful, and I try not to obviously talk about much stuff in there because you can read about it and probably be much more informative than me just babbling about it here. PF FAQ is very complete, and there are also a few PF books, and I think there's even a republication or a publication of the FAQ that just came out. You can find all those on the OpenBSD website. Yeah. Discussions.
I don't know.
I remember exactly. I remember.
Keep saying so. You know. So what's the difference between keep state and modulate state? So I've only, I'm going to give a half-assed answer here. I've only seen, I've only used modulate state when I have OSs behind it that don't randomize the timestamps on the way out. So it it tracks that it does it for you. And you know, for a host to do itself, like OpenBSD, for example, it doesn't really matter. There are probably other uses for it. There's probably other stuff that's involved, but I don't know that much about it. Sorry? Tagging effect on performance? No, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it would be. It is a rule set match, so it is a match, and what in the beginning of your rule set you would the rule would match. You would tag it because PF uses the last matching rule as the winner. It would continue unless you had a quit. You continue through the rest of the rule set. So probably be the same. I mean, as opposed to not tagging. I don't think there's any substantial overhead in just tagging. I could be completely wrong, but I don't think so. If-bound state policies versus floating state bound policies. When you want to, the place I've seen it used, and I get to use it, is dealing with IPsec traffic. So you want the policies for the encryption, the ENT0 device, or the TUN device, because of what you use. You use. Sorry? I'm sorry. Yes, yes. Wait, say that again? If you were to write rules for the TUN interface or the encryption interface, I typically don't. But no, I don't. So we're wondering where interface bound state policy is advantageous. I think it may actually come in handy with policy based routing. I'm sorry, I can't really answer that. It's a good question, though.
It was like a diagram of the process and walked around.
Wow. I'd like to see that. Okay, please. Well, anyone can grab your MAC address and just take it. You just need to SSH client. Yeah, so basically what OpenBSD is, you set the user shell to a specific shell, and that when you authenticate, that shell will then update an anchor, since here's the user's ID, and then you can do what you want within that anchor. Pass, block, where you're at, do what you want. Yeah. Do you want to reassemble TCP?
I use reassemble TCP. I make a separate rule on my external inbound interface not to include reassemble TCP. And it works. I can just scrub it all, I scrub it up from there from the web browser on a Microsoft client coming into my web server.
I have no idea. I have no experience with that. That's interesting though. So when you're using a... Oh, at IE basically, right? When you're using IE?
I'm using IE and I'm going to firewalling and hopefully a few inside analytics or taxi server running SSL.
Right.
And then
they use the IE and they start getting error. Huh. I turn off 3 TCP there and it's all the way. I don't know. Have you looked at the, I mean, I guess the one thing to do is just look at a TCP dump and figure out where, what's going on. Is it IE 7 or 6 or it doesn't matter? I guess. No, I don't know. I don't know why. I haven't run into that. But, or maybe someone hasn't told me about it. Possible. Okay. Anything else? So I have packet filter firewalls in majority of my clients. Not only are they firewalls, but they're also other things. For example, Bastion Host. Use OpenBSD for all the Bastion Hosts that I built. And it just happens to have PF on it. One of the reasons is because sometimes I don't have access to the reapply or the corporate firewalls, so therefore I have to impose my own rule set, and that's why I use PF on this place. Most places where I need a gateway to, if I need to place a bunch of web servers or database servers or whatever it is behind a trusted device, I'll use it. I also use them even in line with an environment to create an IPsec tunnel between one data center and another data center. Instead of having a dedicated line, you can just do an IPsec tunnel. And PF is perfect for that because it can NAT or if not NAT, you can bridge the two data centers together, and that's one place where you use it. Obviously, the firewall situation where you need to have a firewall set in front, usually you do a CARP pair or three or four, depending on your needs. Does that answer? Yeah. I can't see. I'm just kidding. How lightweight it is? Who knows? So basically it's questions about IPv6 and sort of the place of PF in the IPv6 world and what are the deployments today and where it's going. So PF is it's fully IPv6 capable. I think at least OpenBSD has had V6 in it for quite a while and it's improving every day. I don't have any real world clients using IPv6. I played around with it myself. I understand there are deployments, production deployments of OPF or any OpenBSD box in IPv6 environments. I don't know the details about the extent of what's working, what's not. I do know that I would imagine it is extremely close to the same quality or the same state as IPv4, because almost everything is IPv6. I mean, everything from ICANN to IPsec to CARP, to, so it's all in there, and it's all integrated. I'd be very surprised to hear that E6 wasn't up to snuff. But again, I have no real world I don't know if we need to take more research. Because the state table is the same. They're not multiple state tables. There's one state table. So if it's one state versus another state, it's the same table. And the fields are large enough. So it's that. Anybody else? Everyone want to hear anything else? Useful or non-useful? No. I don't know. Right. So that's one thing I didn't talk about was sort of the troubleshooting tools you could use, the monitoring tools you can use. I'm a big fan of Simon, which is initially developed on Open, but it's ported to everything now. But you can get all sorts of PS stats out of that. You can see, start? Simon, S-Y-M-O-N. That's it. There's a top-like utility called PFTop, which is the ports tree. Which is just like top, but it lists your states, your active state table basically, and it goes through what's going on, everything from TCP, UDP, and everything. Then there are the multitude of options that you can run to PFCTL to give you current state queues, the window size of a particular flow. There's a whole slew of options, a whole slew of debugging and verbose options you can send to PFCTL for debugging and monitoring and things like that. There's also a bunch of other things which I haven't mentioned, such as labels. You can label rules and actually start accounting and sending those to some sort of a process that does billing, if you like, based on packets or streams in general. This is too many things to go through, so sort of try to cover the things. So, I don't know if that's that what you want to hear. So that.
We're gonna thank you very much, O'Connor. We're gonna be going to